The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show.
On Relevant Radio.
Somebody needs to remind you, people, the government does not pay for anything. It takes money from other people to pay for things. There is no free. Social Security is not free. Subsidized housing is not free. Healthcare is not free. Free is it has no cost. God, man. We have failed our children in basic economic education. It might be free to you. The rest of us are going to be paying for it. And some of us are not confused about that. We know where the money came from, out of our back pocket.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, strap on your seatbelt, get ready. You're going to be spending some money, that's for sure. The Senate passed a $1 trillion infrastructure package that's going to add about $250 billion to our national debt. That's a lot of money, right? Right now, this is tied to another bill, a massive $3.5 trillion bill that it's going to pay for things like community college and paid family leave and preschool and extending the child tax credit and taxes on, you know, businesses and the wealthy and amnesty for illegal immigrants and a whole lot of other things. We spoke about it a little bit earlier. That was Dave Ramsey you heard there in that clip. If you want to go back and get plugged into the Senate's infrastructure bill and what it means for the future of the country and what it means for you, your children, and perhaps even your grandchildren in terms of costs and where this will go and ultimately how it may end, you'll love the conversation we had in hour one of today's broadcast. Easy way to listen to it. Just go to relevantradio.com and search for my show, The Drew Mariani Show. The podcast will be up in probably about an hour after we're off. Maggie's working on that right now, and we'll have it online for you. So it's a great conversation, and it'll put you in the know of where we're heading as a country. And actually, you can listen to any of the hours. If you missed the segment we just did on fasting, check that out as well. It's a great conversation. Right now, I want to get you plugged into something else that is unfolding. And this is one of those things where I think people hate America. They must. I don't understand the mindset of certain people. In the middle of last month, the Secretary of State, Antony Blinken, he did something that none of his predecessors have ever done, right? He invited the UN, he invited the United Nations to travel to the country and to evaluate our human rights record. Now, you take a look at all the chaos that's been going on in the country and all this racial talk and all this stuff that's going on. He wants the UN to come to the United States and evaluate our human rights record. Why didn't he invite them to China to investigate the Uyghurs and the concentration camps there, or to Pakistan, or to Iran, or to so many of the other places where these abuses are taking place? If you're not familiar with this, let me plug you into an interview that was done on human rights atrocities, just to give you a sense of what is happening, let's say, in other countries like China, by the Chinese Communist Party. I think CBN did this. Listen to this.
Before the 2008 Olympic Games, China pledged to improve its human rights record. But the Communist Party reversed course, intensifying repression. More than a decade later, the situation is so bad there that China expert and author Gordon Cheng says it's hard to fully conceive.
China's crimes against humanity, including genocide, are comparable to what the Third Reich did prior to the mass exterminations that began in 1941. These are atrocities that the world has not seen for decades.
There's over a million Muslim Uyghurs in concentration camps as we speak. The women are partitioned off when they get there and forced into forced abortions, forced sterilization, mass rape campaigns. It's horrific and disgusting. Add that to what's happened in the complete erasure over years of the Tibetan Buddhist culture. The Chinese Communist Party is in an absolute war with any type of religious liberty.
Several lawmakers, including Representative Mike Waltz, have pushed the International Olympic Committee for years to move the upcoming games out of China. Seeing little to no progress, they're now calling for a boycott.
I just can't imagine seeing the American flag flying there, because essentially to President Xi, who's a dictator, it'll be the entire world shrugging their shoulders, turning a blind eye, and saying essentially, tacitly, all of that is okay.
Waltz points to the past when we should have boycotted a host country and didn't.
1936 in Germany. People forget that Russia invaded Crimea just months after the 2014 Sochi Games. We've seen time after time that dictatorships are emboldened when the world turns a blind eye.
So the Secretary of State, said did something that no one else has done, none of his predecessors have done. Hey, UN, come on in. Check us out. Now, there's some who might think, oh, that's noble. That's a good thing, right? It's very noble of him. You know, our human right record should be open to scrutiny from anyone. But here's the thing. I just want to put kind of a sharper point on this. The Human Rights Council at the UN, just to give you a little history here, a little perspective, it's corrupt, all right? The Human Rights Council at the UN is corrupt. It has as members people from China. You just heard that report, right? From Russia, from Iran, and other countries that abuse human rights on a daily and hourly basis. And they're going to come in and they're going to evaluate us? There's also the fact that the criteria that they're going to be using to judge our human rights records is constantly changing. It's not some standard. Right? It's constantly changing. But here's the greater issue, okay? Inviting the UN to intervene, it violates the principle of our own self-government. All right, so what the heck is the Secretary of State doing? Somebody explain that one to me. The U.S. was founded on the idea that we, the people, right? We, the people, are the ones who rule ourselves. Inviting an outside body like the UN to tell us where we're going wrong invites them then to start telling us what we got to do about it. Now, there is an advantage that we have over the UN. You know, we pay most of the UN's bills, right? The U.S. is a very generous country, and we're the largest contributor to the UN. And, of course, former President Donald Trump used the fact to great effect when he was in office. But it's doubtful that President Biden's going to do the same thing. But, you know, at least, you know, the option is there. So we'll see how this all unfolds. I'm joined right now by somebody who can give some perspective on this. If you want to join us, feel free to dial in, too. You can do that. He's the Vice President for Legal Studies at the Center for Family and Human Rights. And you should check this organization out. They do good work. It's c-fam.org, okay? c-fam.org. And it's good to have with me today Stefano Generini. And Stefano, thank you for your time. It's good to have you with
me. Thank you, Drew.
I'd love your take on this. Maybe I'm being melodramatic here. I don't know. I mean, you're very concerned, I know, about this investigation. I'm concerned about this investigation. You believe, I'm assuming, it's an inquisition. That's something I had read. Who's going to be doing this work, and what are your concerns?
So I've been saying that, you know, all this is worse than it seems. You know, there has been some criticism of the announcement from Anthony Blinken that the special procedures, as they're called, these are like UN human rights experts, will be invited. There's an open invitation to all of them. And we're talking here about something like 50 special procedures and that are being invited. So, and there, these are mandates that have to do with all manner of human rights issues. We're talking about the right to health, the right to be rid of sovereign debt, the right to food and water, the right to be free of torture. There's a special rapporteur on racism. All of these rapporteurs now have this open invitation to come to the United States and to comment on social policies, our laws, race relations, you name it. And, you know, I can just see the mischief that's going to come from this. Hmm. And a lot, it's going to be weaponized by the left to erode further trust in U.S. institutions and to further politically divide us.
All right, let's do this. I'm going to open the phone. So if you want to join us, feel free to dial in, share your thoughts, your comments, or ask your questions. It's 888-914-9149. We'll go to Madison, Wisconsin. Stefano, Susie has got a comment for you. Susie, good afternoon.
I do have a comment. I say, let them come. We don't have anything to hide. What do we care? Let them come in and prove that we have nothing to hide.
I love it. So, and that's such a great comment, Susie. Thank you very much. A lot of people are saying that. You know, like, we'll go shoulder to shoulder against China or Iran or Pakistan or any other place like that, Stefano. Why should we be concerned? I mean, our human rights record is probably better than anyone's in the world.
Yes, but that's not what these UN human rights experts are here to document. They will not document what the reality is in many cases, the fact that the United States is the probably the freest country in the world, and the COVID madness has highlighted that amongst many other things. But if you look at actually what's going to happen when these special procedures come, you'll have these UN human rights experts. They'll be calm, and every expert will be, you know, presented at universities, at high society event, as if they were foreign dignitaries, and they will conduct consultations, both privately as well as publicly. And at the end of their visit, they will issue a report.
Right.
And, of course, the purpose of the visit will be to issue a report on the human rights record of the United States on any of these thematic areas.
Right.
And they will inevitably describe the United States as a uniquely sexist, racist, unfair place. Where people are kept in poverty and families are destroyed. And this will be the official line of the special procedures, because that's the way that they operate, and because that's the type of agenda, the leftist agenda that they advance. So in actual fact, these reports will then be wielded as weapons by leftist politicians here in the United States. They will be also wielded against the United States in international negotiations. So there really is no benefit at all from having these experts coming to the United States. I see no benefit at all from having them here. I can see only mischief coming from it.
So where are they going, and who will they be talking to? I mean, what's the itinerary, and, you know, what do you think is going to come from it?
Well, most of these human rights experts are academics, and so that's the kind of environment where they really feel comfortable. And so a lot of their work is going to be carried out under or in partnership with universities and with powerful leftist NGOs. You can imagine which ones, you know, Amnesty International, Human Rights Watch. And these are all organizations that promote abortion, promote the LGBT agenda. They streamline these very controversial policies in all the reports of these UN human rights experts.
Yeah. So, you know, one of the big threats, I think, in our country today is religious liberty. Is that at stake here? How do you see that?
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, if there's one thing that UN experts have consistently demonstrated, is that they are not at all interested in religious liberty or defending the free exercise of religion, especially when it comes to protecting conscience rights. We have had an endless succession now of UN human rights experts that have attacked the conscience rights of health providers to object to, performing or participating in abortion or even referring for abortion. In fact, the guidance from UN experts now throughout the UN system is that health providers who objects to performing abortions must still refer women for abortion, even if it goes against their conscience.
Wow. Now, let's take another call or two. Lino is listening in Nevada, and let's get him on the air. Lino, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Let me tell you people something. This don't forget that Alger Hiss wrote the charter to the United Nations. He was a communist operative, was busted and convicted as a spy in this country back in the late 40s. Secondly, I have seen that this is a prelude to having this country invested with UN troops, and I have seen what the UN troops can do from the Congo way back when Dag Hammarskjöld was directing fire against innocent Congolese people to Biafra in 1968 when UN troops were committing atrocities against the Biafrans. And this is what we can expect from this despicable move.
All right, it's the final respond.
Well, I don't think we'll be seeing any troops, UN troops in the United States anytime soon, thankfully. But I do think that there's a lot of communist influence at the founding of the United Nations, particularly the fact that the UN Charter did not mention at all, or the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, yeah, for that matter, did not mention at all God or even natural law. That was because the communists at the time did not want that. But at the same time, there was a little bit of a mixed bag of the founding of the UN, just like there was the founding of the United States was a bit of a mixed bag. There was a little bit of everything, but I do think that overall, when the United Nations was founded, and if you look at read through the UN Charter, you will see it. It was founded very much strongly on the principle of respect for sovereignty, and what we're seeing with this move of inviting external human rights experts to sort of investigate the United States, right, and comment on social policies and the laws we're adopting.
Right.
They'll talk about the infrastructure bill. They'll talk about how the infrastructure bill is racist and sexist and things of that sort. I mean, they'll just meddle in all U.S. affairs, political affairs.
Right,
and it's external interference. It interferes with our self-government. And it does not respect our sovereignty.
I could not agree with you more. I'm totally on page with that. Margaret's listening in Chicago. If you're just tuning in, I'm speaking today with Stefano Generini, and we're taking a look at the U.S., the Secretary of State, Anthony Blinken, inviting the United Nations to travel the country and evaluate our human rights record. Margaret, thanks for joining the conversation. You're on the air.
Hi, Drew. Thanks for taking my call. I mean, for me, it just doesn't make sense. It's like you work for a business and it's your busiest time of the year and you have so much going on. And you say, hey, IRS, why don't you audit my company right now? Right. You know, I mean, it's just going to cause, it just will take up so much more time and attention away from the things that the government should really be focusing on right now. I think, too, that it really should be focused on the countries that are killing people, torturing them, and it just, I think it is so wrong because we're not protecting the people that really need our help.
Well, Margaret, thank you. And Stefano, I'll let you respond to that, but I also want you to follow up to, after they do come through here, what happens with the report? Who sees it? How influential is it? What gets done?
So, yeah, I don't think it's going to, you know, it would be very laborious in terms of U.S. government energies, just to respond to the question. The way the report will be used is principally by leftist organizations and governments to promote their agenda and to attack the United States. I can easily imagine, politicians like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez citing UN experts to say that the United States is racist, and to say the United States is sexist, and to say that there is a systemic flaw in the American economy, and all manner of other commentary on our social and political situation, which even in those cases where it is legitimate, it is not the place of international experts to come and interfere in our internal affairs. And here, this is a really important distinction that we have to make. There are internal political affairs in the United States which are only our business as Americans to rule. It's what we call self-government. Human rights experts only have to do with the relations of governments to their citizens in the sense of where there's blatant human rights abuses. We're not here talking about actions by the U.S. government. Certainly you could talk about, the way that, big tech and the U.S. government are plotting to censor Americans of all stripes. There will certainly be renewed attacks on freedom of conscience for healthcare providers, as you can imagine, as there was under the Obama administration. But the UN experts will not address those. And those are the real human rights abuses. The UN experts instead will be in line with the leftist agenda that is being promoted by many politicians. And so what they will do is actually further divide our country and contribute to further division and further erosion of trust in our institutions.
Yeah, I only have a few moments left here at that. I'm just curious, as we're talking about this, why the Secretary of State, what the motivation behind having the UN do this is. Was this part of the Biden agenda? Was it something that he solely feels motivated by? I mean, what's the benefit of this, and what's driving this invitation?
I think they have a term for it. It's called virtue signaling.
And
essentially, that's what it is. It's not.
You're right.
In many ways, it's because the Biden administration is a very, you know, you could say a very leftist administration. They are signaling to their friends internationally, and you know, and the left is an international movement. It always has been,
yeah.
And unlike conservatives, which are always working within the scope of national space and national traditions, generally the leftist progressive agenda is a very globalist agenda. And so this is a way for the folks at the State Department and the White House to signal internationally, hey guys, you know, we're with you again. Now let's make progress.
Well, hey, Stefano, I want to thank you for your time. I got to leave it right there because I'm up against the clock. But people want more information on this. This might be news to a lot of them. What's the best way to do that? Is there articles written or resources that they can tap into?
Yeah, we write every week about what's happening at the UN, and you can sign up for our Friday Facts. That's what it's called, the Friday Facts, at our website, which is c-fam.org, c-fam.org.
All right, that's Stefano Generini. Stefano, thank you. We'll catch up again
soon,
okay? Always good to talk with you. An important conversation. He is the Vice President for Legal Studies at the Center for Family and Human Rights, and against c-fam.org to get connected. Just want to put it on your radar. I don't know if you heard that story, but that's what's happening. And I, as you know, I like to look at the big picture here. When we come back, I want to take a look at something else that's unfolding right now. You probably heard this story yesterday. If you haven't, this is important. This one is really important. Code Red is being called by climate experts. And they're saying that we are experiencing right now a change in climate that has, you know, gone too far. It's grim, is what they say. They're warning there's nowhere to run. There's nowhere to hide from rising global warming levels. The United Nations Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, or the IPCC, they're calling this landmark report Code Red for Humanity. And I'll tell you what they're saying, okay? And when we come back, we'll talk a little bit about where we stand right now. The UN, speaking of the UN, is saying that where we are as a planet, not just the country, the UN is warning of irreversible effects, what they're calling human-induced climate change. So what does this mean for you personally, the next 5, 10, 15, 20 years? What's it mean for the future of your children or for the future of the human race? We'll look at that more when I return.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Now, you got to check this out, right? We're speaking a little bit about the UN and, you know, Secretary of State inviting them in to evaluate our human rights. Check out what the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change had to say, the IPCC. They issued a report yesterday. Got a lot of people's attention. According to NBC News, the UN, as a UN-run agency, it told the world that limiting global warming to close to 1.5 degrees Celsius or even 2 degrees Celsius above pre-industrial levels will be beyond reach, and they say the next two decades, without immediate, rapid, large-scale reductions in greenhouse gas emissions. So the U.S. Secretary General called it a code red for humanity. And look, I don't want to diminish this or downplay it. I don't want to make it sound over dramatic. We are stewards of the environment and of the planet that God gave us. I think we need to be responsible for it. But is it really that critical right now? How severe is this? You know, this summer's apocalyptic wildfires and bizarre events that we're seeing in nature, flooding in Europe and places like that, have a lot of people concerned about climate change, about warming. Is it a cycle that we're in? Is man responsible for this? Are we at a tipping point? I want to look at that. Dr. Roy Spencer is going to be stopping by in a minute. But right now, let me share with you CBS News' report on this new UN study.
This summer's apocalyptic wildfires in California and Greece, floods in Belgium, are just a glimpse of what could come. Scientists say the planet is warming faster than at any time in at least 2,000 years.
Climate change is a problem that is here now. Nobody's safe, and it's getting worse faster.
Is there still time for us to offset some of the worst impacts of climate change?
There is absolutely more time. We have time to save ourselves. We're going to see some extremes in climate, but we can avert complete catastrophe, but we can't avert all catastrophes. As we can see, some of them are already happening across the earth.
So the UN Secretary General called it a code red for humanity. He also said this: the alarm bells are deafening and the evidence is irrefutable. Greenhouse gas emissions from fossil fuel is burning and deforestation is choking our planet, and it's putting billions of people at immediate risk. According to NBC, the report shows that the emissions of greenhouse gases from human activities, that, you know, it's responsible, they say, for roughly about 1.1 degrees Celsius of warming since 1850 to the 1900s. And it finds that the average over the next 20 years, the global temperature is expected to reach or exceed 1.5 degrees Celsius of warming. I know there's a lot of numbers to try to get your head around, but despite all those warnings, there are skeptics. I know you might be very concerned about where we are. We've had these kinds of warnings before. I don't know if you can remember back to 1987. There were warnings that temperatures would be 3 to 4 degrees Celsius higher by this year. The reality is that we've only had an increase of less than half a degree. Okay, just to give you some perspective. Now, it has gone up, but a half a degree. All right. As skeptics are you know, being pushed aside, if you're skeptical about climate change, and I don't know where you are on it, if you happen to say, I don't know if it's all man-made, we don't know whether solar activity plays a role in it, we've only been keeping weather records since the 1860s, you know, how much do we really know about the planet and the cycles of warming and cooling? If you have that attitude, you're being pushed aside like a kook or a crank, right? So the narrative coming from the media right now is that the sky's falling. You need to do everything in your power right now to stop using fossil fuels, period. We need batteries. We need energy. We need electric, right? How true is that? You know, again, I just want to be a purveyor of truth. I want to be on the right side of the issue. You know, and I do believe we're responsible. We've got to be good stewards of the environment. If we can mitigate and limit emissions, great. But at what cost? And also, what about China? What about India and other polluters? You know, when are they going to get on board with all this? So I've invited Dr. Roy Spencer to join me. He is a principal research scientist at the University of Alabama in Huntsville. But before that, I'll give you a little background on him. He's very credentialed, and what he says I have a lot of respect for. He was a senior scientist for climate studies at NASA's Marshall Space Flight Center, where he and Dr. John Christie, they received NASA's Exceptional Scientific Achievement Medal for their global temperature monitoring work with satellites, okay? So what he says, I think, has a lot of weight. He, you know, his work with NASA continues at the U.S. Science Team Leader for Advanced Microwave Scanning Radio Meter Flying on NASA's Aqua satellite, and he's provided Congress testimony several times on the subject of global warming, so he's one of the best experts we could talk to about where we are and this code red that has been issued. If you want to learn more, too, I'll give you his website now. I'll give it to you again later, so grab a pen. It's drroyspencer.com. It's well worth checking out his website. Doctor, it's good to have you back. Good afternoon. Hey, doctor, are you with me?
Yes, hey. You're breaking up as near as I can tell. I think it's on your end, but I've been listening to most of what you said. Can you hear me?
I can. I'll tell you what, if I'm breaking up, let me take a short pause here, and we'll come back and we'll continue our conversation, okay? That's Dr. Roy Spencer. I'll be back right after this.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forrester.
Your daily dose of faith, hope, and charity. The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, great to be back here with you today. Thank you for joining me. If you are just getting plugged in, taking a look at the IPCC Climate Change Report, and as I was sharing with you, this report has come out. It's a UN-run agency that has warned the world right now. The UN Secretary General called it Code Red for Humanity, and we're joined by a climate expert, Dr. Roy Spencer. And Doctor, let's pick it up on that point. I was sharing a little of the background and some of your credentials as well, but this is a pretty scary warning. The alarmist tone of the report and of its proponents and the media pushing this pretty hard should give everybody pause. Should we be alarmed? What do you make of this? And you know, what kind of evidence is there to support it?
Well, I don't think we should be any more alarmed than we were told to be 50 years ago when the first warnings came out, which gave us only 10 years left to do something about climate change, or it would be, you know, irreversible damage. Well, every 5 or 10 years, we hear we only have 10 years left. And once again, we only have 10 years, or some people say 12 years left, to reverse things. The truth is, this IPCC, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, it was formed in the late 1980s by a lot of bureaucrats and politicians who had seen the success they did or they had with the regulation of freon, basically, you know, the bans on producing freon, which depletes ozone in the stratosphere. Okay, so they saw that and they decided, okay, carbon dioxide is next. We are going after that. That's why the IPCC was formed. So basically, the scientists that are involved in it, there's a lot of really good scientists involved with this, but they tend to be alarmist. Those that are on the more skeptical side are either not given prominent positions in the IPCC, or they have actually resigned because the IPCC is so biased. So that's an important thing to realize about the IPCC, is when it comes out with a new report every 6 or 7 years, it's going to be alarmist, because that is their stated goal, is they're out to restrict or reduce or eliminate CO2 emissions, okay? It means a lot of money to be redistributed, basically, from the rich countries of the world to the poor countries. And that's how you get all of the countries of the world, or most of them, on board, is because most of the countries are not part of the first world, you know, most of the countries in the world. So what you have is a report that basically is quite alarmist. It assumes for its scenarios of future CO2 emissions, numbers which we now know are unrealistic, that we aren't going to see those kinds of CO2 emissions. And then on top of that, it assumes that the climate system is quite sensitive to those CO2 emissions. In other words, for a certain amount of CO2 emissions, the climate system is going to warm by a certain amount. Now, I'm no denier. I'm sort of a lukewarmer. Based on all the work we've done and all the evidence I've seen, I think we do cause warming, but it's probably only about half of what they're saying. And I think that the future CO2 emissions are not going to be as high as what they're saying, because, well, it's the amount that's in the atmosphere, because the Earth absorbs, you know, it keeps absorbing half of what we emit. No matter how much more we emit, it keeps absorbing 50% of that. So the Earth is actually much more resilient than they are assuming. Not that we don't have some influence, we do, but it's all very sketchy. And these stories that they're putting out there about wildfires and stuff, that's just bogus. That's against the established published science on severe weather associated, you know, any kind of changes in severe weather with climate change. Mm-hmm. Roger Pilkey Jr., if your listeners would look up Roger Pilkey Jr., he's the expert in this. He has published the most information. He's no denier. He's no global warming denier. He just wants them to be honest about the fact that there has been no increase in severe weather, for instance. no increase in global hurricane activity, no increase in wildfires. Yeah. Okay. Globally, there has been no increase. There's always going to be, you know, more wildfires someplace, like Northern California, where they refuse to cut back the vegetation to keep it from burning during the dry season. So there's just a lot of exaggeration going on.
Let me pick up on that point, though, because those events are what is really driving this narrative. People see huge fires happening all over the world. To your point about California, you're right. Every year we're having these unbelievable fires just ravage those particular areas, right? And I do think better forest management would make a big difference. But, you know, we have them all over the world. Here in the U.S., Canada is having events, Greece, Turkey, Siberia. There's massive flooding in Central Europe. A couple of weeks ago, they got a lot of headlines. And that, by the way, is pretty rare. Lake Mead, some of these other places that are, you know, they're really, really low right now. And those events are all being blamed on climate change. If it's not climate change, what's causing those events?
Okay, for instance, wildfires. We've always had wildfires. It just is they're more widely known now. As soon as there's a fire anywhere in the world, it's immediately on the internet. 100 years ago, that didn't happen. So there have always been wildfires. Floods. This new IPCC report actually says that there's little evidence that floods have increased. Even though it is warmed, the world has warmed some. So that's something where the media is lying.
Right.
Okay? If you hear the media saying the report says floods are, you know, worsening, it's not true. That's not what's in the report. So there's just so many levels of exaggeration that always accompany these reports every time they come up, every 6 or 7 years.
Well, I love talking with you because you give me a lot of hope and a lot of peace. You put on the evening news and you watch this stuff and you're thinking, oh my gosh, when will this end? And then you see this report come out where this is code red for humanity, and yet somebody is credentialed as you coming out and saying, hey, be at peace. You know, things aren't as bad as they appear.
Some of my friends have been making fun of the code red. You know, they have to find something that's newsworthy, right? Some angle, some you know, soundbite that sounds really good. And this time, with this report, which is AR6, the assessment report, the sixth assessment report, it's code red.
Yeah.
And people are joking. How are they going to top that next time?
Right.
Well, I predict it's going to be DEFCON 1 next time, because you can't get worse than code red.
So
they'll go to DEFCON 1 for the climate system. That's
right.
My prediction. I made this prediction on your show, Drew.
I bet you're right. I bet you are right. That's awesome. If you want to join the conversation, I'm going to open the phones. You can get in now. I only have a few minutes left in today's broadcast, but if you had a question, a comment, or an insight, you want to just pull up a chair. It's 888-914-9149. Love to hear from you. Jerry's listening to us in Chino Hills, California, Dr. Spencer, and he's got a comment for you, so let me bring him on. Hi, Jerry. Good afternoon.
Oh, hi. Hey, Father Chad Polchek, I know he's been on your phone or on your show before with the National Bioethics, and he had an article that came out a couple years ago about the steady decline and the credibility of science research, and I thought, wow, this is really interesting. So I read it, and the biggest example he gave was climate change. That it's so complicated that no one can put their finger on and come up with an absolute answer to what's causing it. It's just way too complicated. And unfortunately, I brought it up in our men's Bible study, and it was so, I'll never do it again. We had a couple guys quit because they were so sold on climate change, and you know they didn't really like the article. And I thought it was so interesting. You know, politics and science has really declined credibility. Look at the COVID science. Yeah. I mean, everybody has a different point of view.
Well, Father Polchek, I've got a lot of respect for too. Bright man, and I think that's a great point. And Dr. Spencer, you know, this has almost become a religion to some people. You know, the environmental movement and climate change, and people do get passionate about it. Your thoughts for Jerry?
Well, Jerry is absolutely right. It has become an issue that there's a lot of uncertainty that is unstated, okay? And when the IPCC and the people who believe, there's the scientists that believe there's going to be, you know, climate catastrophe in our future, when they come out publicly, they say things that are alarmist. I mean, if it bleeds, it leads, right?
Yeah,
And so they say things that are alarmist for the sake of getting attention. But in private, they're much more reserved, and they understand there's a lot of uncertainties to the science. I mean, it's possible there will be climate catastrophe, but there is also a lot of evidence that others have published in mainline climate journals that say, hey, based on the amount that the world has warmed, the surface of the Earth, the deep oceans, and what we think has been causing the warming, you can back out how sensitive the climate system is and how much warming we'll see in the future. And what you get is about 1.5 degrees C.
Wow.
What the IPCC is predicting.
Wow. My guest today, Dr. Roy Spencer, if you want to join us, it's 888-914-9149. Let me ask you a personal question, though, because there's this big move by the Biden administration and by a lot of people right now to go completely electric. There's this huge push towards it. Are those really as green as a lot of people are proposing? Because, you know, this stuff has got to be mined, it's got to be disposed. I mean, there's probably a lot of energy that gets spent in creating, you know, these electric venues. How green is electric? Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, it does. And there's a lot of people out there that know a lot more about it than me that are claiming it's not green at all, that there's a lot of destruction of natural habitats to get to mine the minerals that are needed for that, for electric. And right. then when they're done with the, you know, after however many years, the battery, you know, it's like your cell phone battery. It becomes less and less useful, less and less, it'll hold less and less of a charge over time. And eventually you have to throw away the battery. And so far, as far as I know, they just dump the batteries, and it's toxic waste. It's too expensive right now to recycle them. So they're not terribly green. No. All right. Eventually we will need some alternative transportation technology. And it may be that it's electric. I don't know. Right. Because, you know, fossil fuels probably are not going to last forever.
Of course.
It just is. We need to be smart about how we make that transition. We can't put the world's people into poverty just on the idea that we might be averting climate catastrophe. Because so far, there isn't the evidence for climate catastrophe.
Yeah. All right. Let's go back to the phones. We'll take Sean in Berkeley Heights, New Jersey. Sean, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I wanted to make a comment pretty much along the same lines. I think it seems that some folks are politicizing this. I've seen some coverage on other networks, and, you know, they've been alluding to the fact that, you know, basically countries like India and China, they get a free pass. No one's really holding their feet to the fire to ensure that, you know, not just for climate change, but also just in terms of the waste that they're dumping in the oceans. A lot of the international community are sending funds through the Paris Accords agreements to these countries, but we're not really effectively ensuring that they're making efforts to try and mitigate the amount of coal that they're utilizing. Are they transitioning to wind and solar, like they say that they're actually doing? There's no validation and verification. And my other concern is there's talk of the ultimate goal is to get rid of people's cars, because cars are, you know, internal combustion engines, and and it's going to take time. But what I really think this is about, it's about a power grab. And to bring us back to, like, Catholic teaching, like, you go back 50 years ago, I forget the name of the author, but he came out with a book. I think it's a population boom. And it's the same thing. You have folks nowadays who aren't having kids because they think they're going to save the planet, which is ridiculous.
No. All right. It's a great call.
Well, Sean is right about all of these. And it's true. I've given talks where people stand up afterwards and say, what about this? What about that? Right. And sometimes what they finally revert to is, but aren't there too many people in the world anyway?
Right.
And when they get to that point, you realize that there's something a little more sinister at work going on in their brains, because, you know, they want to get rid of the extra people somewhere else, right? Maybe that have a different skin color than them. And that's part of what is driving all this, is they're trying to depopulate the world so that I guess those that are left will have more. Well, you know, I, as a Christian, that doesn't sit very well with me. And then the point about Sean's point about China is very good. China will continue to burn coal very rapidly. They're the leading polluter in terms, if you want to call CO2 a pollutant. I think it's the gas of life, since it's necessary for life. But they are going to continue to produce CO2 as much as they want, and it won't matter what agreements they say verbally or, you know, sign up to. They will do what is in China's best interest. Yeah. That is politically their history.
Yeah.
And no one is going to stop them because, you know, they're they're bigger than any of us, right, in the world.
Yeah.
And they got their sights on, I don't want to say world domination, but, you know, they want to have, they want to have a bigger say in what's done in this world because they clearly, you know, outnumber us.
Well, that's part of their philosophy, the hegemony. You know, they want to rule and dominate the world. And China's being aggressive. They are rising today. There's no question about it. Hey, Sean, great call. I appreciate it. I thought you brought up some great points. Robert is listening in Illinois. He wants to join the conversation too, Dr. Spencer. Robert, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Hey, I just find it concerning that the UN came out with this brand new report, and shortly afterwards, the Democrats have this huge climate change spending bill. Huh. It almost seems like the two were in communication at a time. I'm just worried with this new spending bill.
They definitely are. They definitely are.
So you think the two are hand in hand?
Oh, the Democrats are very well organized on this. For instance, my experience testifying in Congress.
Yeah.
On the subject of climate change. The Democrats are always much better organized on climate change issues than the Republicans are in terms of trying to fight them. So you can bet that the Democrats in Congress are timing whatever they can to coincide with this new IPCC report. I know that for a fact, 100%.
All right, let's go to Robert. Good point. Great call. Frankie in Burlington, New Jersey. Good afternoon.
Hi, great show. You know, I don't know. It's insane how far I've been in the environmental business for quite a while. And I've seen a lot of these generating plants implement billions of dollars worth of like vapor scrubbers and clean coal and carbon capture. And I really fear that these policies are, number one, going to destroy energy independence and our economic well-being. I just don't know. It's so difficult to fight it, though, when you've got this narrative that's like pushed everywhere, you know? I don't know. Just it's scary.
No, I agree. I agree with everything you just said. And I don't have any solution to this problem.
Yeah. All right.
Mm. Thank you.
You got it, Frank. Thank you. Mary in St. Louis, I appreciate your patience. Good afternoon.
Certainly. Thanks for taking my call. I really do appreciate the conversation and explanation on what is a very, very serious topic. But just to add a little levity, okay. Unfortunately, I'm old enough to remember the impending ice age that was identified on the cover of Newsweek in the early 1980s. Could you tell me when the switch came and how that occurred?
Great call.
The switch came basically, I remember it because I was in college in meteorology in the late 1970s. And I remember when there was actually a debate, you know, in the universities at that time between those that thought the future had global cooling coming and the future had global warming coming. Well, the science wise or the policy funding, I should say funding wise, the global warmers from increasing CO2, they won out. Okay, they won that battle, and I agree. They actually have better science. I mean, eventually there will mm-hmm. be cooling.
Yeah.
I think, you know, due to changes in the orbit geometry of the Earth and the Sun, but that occurs on many thousands of years, not on hundreds of years. So, but yes, it's an example of what we started talking about to begin with. Is scientists can be so certain of something until they latch on to some other theory, and then they get really certain about that. And then that's going to hold until they find out something else. Well, this is going to hold
because it's a cash cow.
I love it.
This is the only way climate researchers can get money to do research is basically agree with the IPCC and the paradigm that we are causing a global warming catastrophe, and that's the only way they can get money out of Congress, out of the United States funding agencies, National Science Foundation, NOAA, NASA, Department of Energy, all of them. You have to sign up to the global warming narrative or you won't get funded.
That's the money line from today's show. You're not kidding. That's really the what underlines all this, isn't it? It's the money that's driving this. And but Doctor, I want to thank you for your time, for your perspective, for your honesty, for your clarity on the issue. If people want to follow you, I guess the best way to do that is simply drroyspencer.com, drroyspencer.com is the best way to connect.
That's right, Drew.
All right, well, thank you. I'm out of time for the day. I'm grateful for your time, Doctor. We'll catch up again soon, I hope. Always enjoy our time together. And I want to thank you for allowing me to be part of your afternoon. I am out of time, but I'll be back again tomorrow, about 21 hours. You can set your watch. Can't wait for that time. Until our paths again cross, remember, God loves you, and so do I. Have a great afternoon, all right?